Welcome to the Thrive Vineyard Church Sermon of the Week. We hope you enjoy this message by Pastor Molly Kiefer. For more information about this podcast and other resources, visit thrivevineyard.com.
We're starting a new series called Expect the Unexpected. And what we're doing is we're just preparing nothing. There was nothing normal about the resurrection. And we're just kind of setting our hearts to be wowed and in awe again of Jesus this season. February, a couple months ago, two things were happening in my life at the same time. I was getting ready to take a team to Puerto Rico for a missions trip, and we were zeroing in our last couple days here before we were going to leave. And at the same time, Kevin went to Arizona to go to Phoenix to see his parents, to stay with his parents, but to go to a vineyard conference. And so the day that he was traveling to Phoenix to go see his parents, I happened to have my conference call with our team, our last conference call before the trip. And so Kevin's on this flight, and I'm in the kitchen on this conference call, and I'm standing at the counter. My computer's open, and I'm taking notes on the trip, and I have my phone next to me because we're on this conference call. My headphones are on. And Kevin is in the air, and we're having this meeting, and we're wrapping things up, and we're ending the phone call with some prayer time together, and we're just praying, and we're taking turns praying, and my computer's open, and I'm just kind of walking around, and I see that Kevin's calling in during this phone call, during my conference call, during the prayer time. And you know on the iPhone how you can, in one swoop, like hit a button that sends a text message and declines the call, right? And so I hit, can I call you later? And that goes through. And I see on my computer that he responds really quickly. And it says, no. And I'm like, oh, I can't call you later. And I'm starting to have this dialogue in my head, like, I have to call you right now. You need me to stop what I'm doing and call you. But I'm on this conference call. So I start typing my response on my computer. And I just type, hey, we're finishing up a team meeting. Can I call you just really quickly in 5 minutes? And as I'm typing that, the next text pops up on my computer and it says problem. And I'm going, oh my goodness, there's a problem. I'm like picturing like, okay, is he calling me from midair? Is this like a Hudson landing on a Hudson River emergency moment? I'm like rolling through the problems. Like, is there a problem with the flight? Is there a problem with, did his luggage not get there? And I'm thinking he's going to see his parents. They're supposed to meet him at the airport. Like I'm thinking, okay, literally I'm like, there's a problem with one of his parents' health, someone's in the hospital, and I'm just working through this story. I'm working through all these scenarios in my head, and I hit my text, you know, I'm just finishing up, I'm extending the second text, like 5 minutes, we're in prayer, and I'm trying to work through, do I hang up on the team? Like just beep, like hang up on them and explain it later that Kevin has a problem, he's in Arizona, or do I interrupt the prayer? Someone's like deep in prayer, do I interrupt it and say, so sorry guys, I'm bailing on the rest of this prayer, I gotta call Kevin right away, and I'm working through, what am I gonna do here? And as I do that, up on the computer pops his next text, take your time. And in that moment, I realized what I did is that was supposed to say, no problem. And I'm reading, no problem, like exclamation point. We have a problem. And because he hit send in between the no and the problem, I am just completely making up all my own stories about all the problems and what's going on this airplane when it was supposed to say, no problem. Take your time. Enjoy your prayer with your team, right? And I'm like in like full, no problem. Mode over here in Palatine in my kitchen. And the deal is, as I was thinking about this, I know this about our brains, how they're wired, is our brains want to close the loop when there's missing information, right? Like we are wired to fill in the story in between the text streams with based on our own context and our own experiences and our backgrounds and what we're bringing into the moment. We want to finish the story. We want to fill it all in. We want to complete the scenario. And our brains work this way, right? And the danger in this knee-jerk reaction that we have in our brains and in our gut is that we are taking something out of context. And when we do that, we end up with false conclusions based on our own false assumptions. We end up with a story that leads us way off course here from my kitchen in Palatine. The story that I'm making up in Phoenix, you know, somewhere out there is completely not rational. And I filled in between the lines, in between the text. I've taken it out of context, out of the tone, out of what was supposed to just be a complete sentence. And I filled it in with my own story. And we do this, we run, and all of a sudden we are knee deep in fear. We're knee-deep in crisis. We're knee-deep in panic and worry, and it is a waste of our energy based on a false scenario that we've created for ourselves. And I was thinking about this, and as we do with texts, we do with God, that we, in our relationship with God, we have some spaces in between the lines of the text. We have a moment gap in between a no and a problem, and we're reading it into who God is and into our lives, and we're reading into no problem, when in reality, God is saying, no problem. No problem here. No problem here, right? And we read in between the spaces where there is unfinished business in our lives, where the story hasn't been completed, the loop hasn't been closed, in some of the mystery and some of the unfinished stories that we are reading into it, again, where God is just saying over it, no problem. No problem. When we are off running with all the scenarios and all the problems that could be and all the things that we're going to face, we know we're just going to face in about 5 minutes the truth of it. And we take our own context and our own backgrounds and our own experiences and our own assumptions about the nature of God, and we fill in the story of our lives in between the lines, don't we? And what I want to know is, do we really want this story? Do we really want this version of God? Where have we misinterpreted his nature? Where have we settled in our limited understanding, in our limited perspectives from our kitchens in Palestine? Where have we settled for less than the fullness of the nature of God? Less than the fullness of his work and his care and his activity in our lives? Where have we put on, based again on our false assumptions and our limited understanding of him, where have we misunderstood the fullness of his heart, the fullness of his provision, the fullness of his care? And we end up with our own version of the truth, and it may not always end us up in like fear and panic, but sometimes we're running ahead in anger, or running ahead in disappointment. We're running ahead in hurt or low self-worth. And if we could see the whole story, if we could see what he was experiencing in Phoenix, right, that we would realize, oh, that was just a waste of my energy. That was just a waste of a prayer moment with my team here. And so my goal today is that we would discover the whole story about the nature of the Father, as told by Jesus, that we would be able to understand, we clear out the misconceptions about the Father. And I was praying about this yesterday, and there's something that burns in me that I have this passion that we would see the Father clearly, that we'd be a generation, a group of people who got the story, the version of him right, and that it affected every part of our lives, that it affected the stories that we're living out, that we could engage in the fullness of the Father and his work as it truly is. And that we have an opportunity this morning to just welcome the Holy Spirit, the one who brings truth. He's the revealer of the Father, right? And we could close the gaps in the story. So we could close those gaps with truth where we don't see accurately, where we've been filling in with our own conclusions in the mystery. And instead of interpreting the text as we see it from our perspective, that we would end up with true conclusions about the nature of God. And Jesus helps us to understand the kingdom, and he would tell stories. He would tell parables to people so that they could really get, he would speak their language so they could get who God really is, who the Father really is. And in Luke 15, Jesus is hanging out with some tax collectors and sinners. And as he is, of course, the Pharisees and the scribes, the religious people of the time, weren't too far off. And he starts telling a story again to reveal the truth of the Father, his nature. And he still tells the story that you guys have most likely heard. It's the story of the prodigal son in Luke 15:11. And I'm just going to read bits of it and recap some of it. But here's where it starts in Luke 15:11. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had and set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. So here we have this younger son who approaches the father, and he does something that we might not think is a huge deal, but it is so shameful. He comes to the father and essentially says, I wish you were dead. In fact, you are essentially dead to me. This relationship that we have, all that it is good for me is the money that is coming to me. And I want the money that you are to me. I want that now. I want you to sell off my property, my part of the property, so that I can go and I can live the life that I want out there. And what is so crazy and so unexpected of this father is he does it. He gets together the title and the deed, and he sells the land and he gives it to the son. And off the son goes, and while living, and he hits this moment where the son has spent it all. And he's wasted it all, and it's all gone, and has no friends, and he hits this rock bottom moment where he looks around, and he has no one, and he has nothing. He has no food to eat. He has no place to live. He has nothing going for him, and so he gets a job, and the best job that he can get at this moment is feeding pigs. And as he's handing out the pig food, he's so hungry, his stomach is so empty, and he has no hope that that the food that he's serving the pigs, that he's giving to the pigs, looks appetizing to him. It actually looks good. And he hits this moment where all of a sudden the father's goodness comes back into his memory for a moment. And it was a wake-up call. And we see in verse 17 that he came to his senses. And he says this, "How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death." And so he makes a plan. "I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. So just make me like one of your hired men.'" So he got up and went to his father. And he knew that as he returned to the father's house, that the best he could hope for was to be an outcast in the father's house. He knew that this was a shame, honor culture. Okay, this was like the culture that he grew up in, that he lived in. And it means that he would have to make up for how badly he acted, that he would have to pay, and he would have to pay a cost that was fitting for the crime, right? And so the only option for him is he hits home. He knows that he never will again expect the father's affection, but that the best he could hope for was to be a day laborer. And the day laborer is like the lowest rung on the servant ladder. It is like the lowest of the lows. And yet, that day laborer would make enough for food. He would get enough for shelter. And so he's heading home, and he's like, "All I have coming for me is hard work. And maybe after 20 to 30 years as like the lowest place in his home, maybe I will have paid enough to come back to maybe even a higher position of working, but I will never be considered a son. This is the most I can hope for," right? And he has this plan. He's devises a plan. And if we take a step back and we check in with the audience, the tax collectors and the sinners and the religious people, they're hearing this son's plan. Good plan. They're like, yes, yes, yes. They're tracking with Jesus as he's telling the story. "You have acted so shamefully. You have brought such dishonor to the father that this is right. You should head home and you should work it all off for 20 to 30 years. And you should never expect his affection. You should never expect his love or to be recognized as a son again. You need to pay for what you've done." Because in this culture, again, protecting the honor of the old man was everything. It was like this patriarchal society. And he has to pay for this. Yes, they're like tracking. Yes, that son needs to pay for what he's done. He needs to work it off. He needs to like know how bad this really was, right? The humiliation of years of hard labor to make up for what you've done. So the audience is hearing this story that Jesus is telling. The son's got the plan, and here's the plan, and they are like, yes, right on. You acted terribly. If you got what you deserve, of course you're starving. Of course you're without friends. Of course you're in a hard place. That's what you get when you do what you did to your father, right? And so the audience is tracking. They totally get it. He's getting what's coming to him. The son, again, he's got this. All that he can expect is years of hard work and labor in this household. So he is setting home with the best plan, the best option that he can see coming. And the audience is like, yes, they're filling in the gaps of what they don't know yet. And they're like, this is reasonable. And that, you know, you're going to be lucky if you get invited back into work in your father's house, right? So he's heading home, and he gets to the outskirts of the village. He's heading home with filling in the gaps of the story, what could be ahead of him. And he's getting to like the outskirts of the village, and the terrain is starting to get similar. You know, he's starting to like recognize that he's headed home. I remember I'd come home from college. I went to college in Indiana, and I hit the Chicago suburbs, and I was like, I'm getting towards home. Like, it's no cornfields, like home. You know that feeling of like a long trip, and you start, it's like, oh, it's billboards are looking familiar, like outlet malls, right? Like, it's come. I'm moving towards home. And again, he's heading home. The only possibility is that I'll be a slave, but at least I'll have food and shelter. And he's heading home, and this is where the story really kicks in. This is where we can pull back, and Jesus can tell us actually what's really happening. Despite what the audience is thinking is lying ahead, despite what the son thinks is coming for him down that road, this is where we get to see it's not what you expect. It's not the natural ways that we can see what's happening far, far away, that what who the Father is, and where all the other assumptions and expectations get quiet. And here's what we read in John 15:20. It says this, that the son is headed home, and it says this about the father: while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. And I want to stop here, because when I read that, I was thinking the only way to see someone far off is to be watching. Right? To be watching. It means that the father was watching the horizon, and this is not how the story is supposed to go down. And it raises all these other questions in my head, like, well, how long has he been waiting? How long has he been sitting on the front porch watching the horizon? Like, how many hours has he wasted just watching for the sun? I mean, what about the rest of your life? What about your other relationships? Like, we would expect the father to be at home dealing with the pain of the loss of what the son has done, dealing with the shame that he has brought on the family, dealing with the rejection. We'd expect the father to be home, you know, getting his own wounds bound up, or to be working to make back what the son just took from you, right? It's not too late. You're not too old. You can, like, certainly, like, put some businesses together and make up for what you just lost, what was just given away and spent freely, right? Instead, this is totally unreasonable. This is totally unexpected. No earthly expectation would ever write this part into the story. And it doesn't stop with the father just watching the horizon, which is crazy. But it goes on to say this, that the father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And he ran to his son. He threw his arms around him and kissed him. This is absolute craziness. Again, you would expect that the father would be waiting. Okay, maybe I see the son on the horizon. I just happen to see him out there. And instead of, we'd expect the father to be at home, like just pacing, bracing himself for an intense conversation, right? We'd expect him to stand his ground and to be maybe preparing for like the punishment that he's about to like give out to the son, preparing himself again to see the son and the pain and the rejection that's going to come back over him. We expect these things, but no, instead he runs to meet the son instead of waiting for him to come to him. And he starts in, the son starts in with his rehearsed speech. He starts in, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." And before the son can get out the fullness of his rehearsed speech, before he can get out his plan to make things right for the father, before he can make the father feel better, before he can work off his debt or even begin to prove that he is worthy of being a slave, before he can work his plan, the father interrupts with forgiveness, with restoration, with compassion, with kindness. And in the story, God is saying, let me show you how the Father really works. Let me show you how he relates to his kids on this earth. Let me show you his outrageous nature. This is the real Father. This is not the world's version. This is not a Sunday school version of the Father. This is not culture's version of the Father. It's not religion's version of the Father. It is not your expected version of the Father. Let me fill in every bit of your own assumptions and expectations and judgments. This is how it really is for God's kids. And our life on this earth, so often I can get it. I can feel like the son's journey home, right? Like we feel like I'm headed towards God, and I'm all alone on this journey, right? I'm like headed towards him with my problems and my needs and my desperation and my expectations of how my life is going to work out here. I'm headed home with like, here is my best version of like of wisdom for my this situation, the relationship that I need help in. Here is my best plan, my best solution for God, how you're going to heal my broken heart. Here is my best way of through, like how I'm going to find the right spouse. Here's how I'm going to actually find satisfaction in this earth or value or worth. And we come to God with our plans and our assumptions and our expectations of how he's going to break in. And we're all in a bind somewhere in this life, aren't we? We all have dilemmas and problems and places where we're desperate for God to break in. We're desperate for heaven to come, that we know we're limited and we can't figure it all out ourselves. We can't figure it out how it's going to end. And we come towards God like this journey, right? And I do this so often. And I'm pointed towards God and I'm like trying to figure out like, how am I going to unlock the God code in my life, right? Like, how am I going to get to him a way that's like pleasing and good enough and in a way that I can like then open my life for his blessing and his provision and his care and his help. And I'm just constantly trying to like crack the God code, the mystery of who he is and how to get his like help and the things I need in my life. And I'm filling in the gaps of what lies ahead with my version of him. And some of us have a version of God where he is an angry God. We grew up with a version of God where it's like, man, I'm going to come to you, but I'm bracing myself because I know that I'm slightly irritating to you, right? I know that you have bigger things to deal with, like food shortages and world peace. And here I am with like my measly need for like, you know, breakthrough in this area. Some of us come with like the baggage of our own childhood fathers, and we think that God is just a bigger version of our earthly father. And that's our idea of him. It's our concept, our assumption of him. We come towards him and we're like, well, I know you're good. I sing about it, but it doesn't have like a real meaning. It's just a concept out there somewhere. It doesn't really mean anything in my spirit, right? I come to God like this was my recent thing. I'm coming to God like, okay, I could just see this. I'm like this father and son on this journey. And our church needs a building. We have 1 year to get out of this place. And we've looked for 5 years. And so I'm coming towards God and I'm like, okay, God, here's what you could do. Maybe you'll give us some favor and we'll be able to stay in this building a little longer, right? So that's plan A. Or God, I'm coming towards you. And maybe there'll be a warehouse somewhere right around here that we can renovate. And maybe we can do a capital campaign and we could raise this much money, right? I'm coming to God with A, B, and C. In reality, way out there in the distance, before I could see him working, before I can see what he's up to, he's a father, and he is running toward me with a robe and a ring and sandals for my feet, like way before I could see what he's doing. And I think I'm just coming from my faraway place, right? Way before that, he's a father, and he's headed towards me with extravagance. He's headed towards me with solutions that I haven't thought of yet. He is headed towards me with more than enough, right? This is who he is. He's making a way toward me, not just with like basic answers, right? But with extravagance. And where you can't see from where you're standing right now, what you don't understand in your kitchen in Palatine is that he is actually moving towards you in his nature of kindness, in his same nature of the Father in this story that Jesus is telling. Goodness, like extravagant mercy, ridiculous love, ridiculous kindness. At every turn in the story, you guys, at every turn, the Father acted in an unexpected way. At every turn in the story. So what's the point? The Father's nature, the nature of the Father's heart, the nature of the Father's love, what he is working in your life right now, it doesn't run along a highway of expectation. And we think that it does. We think that it is going to work just like we have worked it out in our heads, just like the context that we've provided, just like the story that we can tell of him. He doesn't move along the lines of expectation. He didn't in this story. And Jesus is like, you got to see the Father. You got to see him. He's so unexpected. What he does, you haven't begun to dream of yet. He doesn't work within the limitations of expectation in our lives. His nature isn't like human nature. His love isn't like human love. the phrase that God has just been speaking over me lately is this concept of before the foundations of the world, before the foundations of the world. In Ephesians 1, 3 to 6, we read about this love. And this is what Paul writes, that just as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him in love, that he chose us in him. He chose us for his love before the foundations of the world. Now, I know that this is when I start like kind of thinking about God's love and I see this scripture, here's where I go. I go, okay, God, yeah, your love, it existed for me before the foundations of the world. I know what that means. I get it. I know what your love is about. It's like human love. It's just really old, right? Like a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, right? Here's what God is saying, not at all. What he's telling us is that his love for us existed before there were worlds, before there were physical bodies to hold love, before there were like the bounds of like physical, natural space and time. His love existed before there was physical space, before there was like laws of gravity, before there was laws of reaping and sowing. His love for you existed. And what that means is that his love for you has nothing to do with physical, with natural. It's not limited to natural bounds. It's not limited to physical laws. It can't fit within the confines of our physical world. It is so much bigger. Do you hear what I'm getting? Like we have to like almost, I was like processing with the Lord and I feel like he was like, you have to be Alice and you have to get down the rabbit trail because you have to get outside of our natural confines of this physical world to understand my love. It isn't like human love. It existed before, right? It existed before there was such things as humans. So it can't be run along those parallels of human love because it was before. And I know this is so hard for us to get as people, you guys, because we're so used to measuring things, right? Like we've grown up in a life with like on a scale from 1 to 10, right? Like on a scale from 1 to 10, how bad are your allergies right now, right? On a scale from 1 to 10, how good was your dinner last night, right? Like we're so used to this 1 to 10 scale thing. Everywhere we go, we measure things, right? On our stove, you've got your dial, low heat to high heat, right? On your thermometer, it's like negative 20 to 120. It's got to fall somewhere on the scale. You get on the scale in the morning, pops out a number between like 0 and 3. Like we're used to this, right? We're used to putting things in measurements. We approach things in our life this way. And this is how we approach God. And we think about God's love. And we're like, where on the continuum does God's love fall? And we're like, oh, 10 out of 10. His love is a 10 out of 10. And he's saying, you can't put my love on a scale. You can't put my love in a measurement system that you're used to measuring. You have to get outside of the confines of this world to begin to understand my love. The Father's love meets us in unexpected ways outside the confines of our measuring system. And I get it, you guys. This is so natural for us. We have to begin to understand like just the weightiness of his love, because when we get it right, then we start to learn how to live in between the lines in the story. We start to learn how to fill in the gaps between the text streams. We start to understand in that mystery when we're not really sure how it's going to end. And instead of fear and dread and panic and despair, we begin to fill in the story with God's nature. Oh, this is how he loves. He loves like the Father and the prodigal son. He loves in a way that existed before the worlds were even created. This is who he is, and this is how he is in my life. A Father who goes beyond what anyone could expect. Completely surprising, completely wonderful, that we begin living out this version of the story. So here's what I want to know. Where in your life are you needing to remind yourself of this unexpected nature of the Father? Where is there unfinished business in your life? Where have you jumped to conclusions based on your own assumptions, your own context, your own expectations about God? And what we're gonna do is we're gonna actually just stand up and I'm gonna walk us through just a moment of prayer in this as we're identifying where we need to meet the Father in this way. And the worship team's gonna come up and we're gonna end with a song here, and we're wrapping up. But here's what I felt like the Holy Spirit was asking of us this morning. That I want you to get in your mind's eye this story of the Son. And I want you to just kind of get where you are in this journey. And I want you to just get into that place where you have unfinished business and you're heading towards God in the mystery. You're heading towards Him with needs or dilemmas or something that you're wrestling through. And I want you then in that place to be able to pan out about 20 miles. And I want you to see the Father, that He is already moving towards you. And He's moving towards you with extravagant love. He's moving towards you with an unexpected nature of mercy and kindness and goodness. That He has a ring and a robe and sandals, and He's making a way towards you to cover. He's making a way towards you to fill in. He's bringing a conclusion. He's bringing your destiny. He's bringing the end to you. What you haven't been able to see, I feel like God wants you to see this morning. That out of His nature, He works in your life. Out of a nature that is outrageous, it's ridiculous. We're going to just sing this song together as we just engage. I want us to live out the story this morning, you guys. We're going to sing just for a second about the goodness of God.